And good morning to everyone. Justice Wright will not be participating on any of today's cases. With that, the first case of the day is Tilson versus Tilson. Mr. Cabot, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Matt Cabot. I represent the appellant in this matter, Jason Tilson. Fairly simple case in terms of facts, not a thing to quote about the absence of those exceptions, purely based on the transcript. Nebraska has a statute that allows a plaintiff to dismiss his or her or his cause of action. This court's cases hold that where there is no counterclaim filed, the plaintiff may dismiss his cause of action at any time before case submission. The action is dismissed.
Is a dismissal the same as a motion to dismiss?
Well, anticipating that question would come up, I think that is the principal argument of my colleague, that when Mr. Preble, Tilson's attorney at the time, filed the motion to dismiss, that there is somehow that didn't trigger the dismissal of the entire action because it was called a motion to dismiss as opposed to a dismissal or notice of dismissal.
Did the content request relief from the court?
I don't actually remember what the sentence said. I think the law in this court is clear that we don't look at the title of the, we look at really what you're doing, what you're beyond sort of the words on the page, what you're really doing.
Well, let's assume for the moment it said, comes now, plaintiff, and moves to dismiss the complaint for dissolution.
I think that's a dismissal.
You do?
I don't, and I think it happens instantly. Personal practice would have been to say, you know, notice of dismissal comes now, the plaintiff, and hereby gives notice.
Suppose the motion adds, wherefore plaintiff prays the court enter an order dismissing.
Well, our cases, and I think I cited one in my brief, that was a juvenile court matter, but that it happens instantly, that there is no, and that it is the clerk who enters the dismissal on the records of the court, that there is no need for an order or a journal entry, no signed by a judge. In this regard, it's similar to Nebraska Revised Statute Section 25-217 that says that an action is commenced on the date the complaint is filed shall stand dismissed as to any defendant not served within 6 months of the filing of the complaint. The cases construing and addressing 25-217 clearly say it happens by operation of law. There is no need for an order saying dismiss. There's no need. It just happens. And I believe that that this court's authority provides that it's instant, that it happens instantly. In fact, I think in the leading cases, at least in the dissolution of marriage context, are Schroeder versus Schroeder and Warner versus Warner. And I think in one of those cases, it was a motion. It was called motion to dismiss. And so I don't believe that the distinction of motion to dismiss versus voluntary dismissal, notice of dismissal, I don't think that is a distinction with any substance.
Would it matter in your view if another party had appeared?
Well, and the court has addressed that before in the cases, that where an answer is filed but no counterclaim is filed, the defendant essentially leaves the suit entirely in the plaintiff's hands. My colleague, we're just discussing the sort of harshness of this rule and whether or not maybe this is the best rule. But that's the rule, that where there has been no counterclaim filed, the defendant has left the suit entirely with the plaintiff. In this case, not only was there no counterclaim, there wasn't even an answer by the defendants.
Were there any other appearances?
Anticipating that, yes, there was. What had happened, I believe, three or four months before Mr. Tilson filed the motion to dismiss, Mrs. Tilson's mother filed a complaint for grandparent visitation. As the court knows, we have a specific statute that addresses a complaint for grandparent visitation.
So another individual was participating in the lawsuit seeking relief.
Well, that the grandparent visitation statute doesn't say you file it in the action. It says you file it in the court where the dissolution of marriage has been decreed or where the dissolution of action is pending, in the same court, not in the action. Moreover, the
was it filed in this action?
I believe that...
In this court, in this action?
Mr. Kiker used the case number. I think me and this court have, on a previous occasion, talked about the practice of using the same case number. Some subsequent, some third party comes in or files something under that same case action. It causes confusion. But the grandparent visitation statute says, doesn't say file it in the action. You're not intervening in the action. You are, or seeking to intervene. You are petitioning for grandparent visitation. And that statute simply says you file it in the court. Moral, the grandparent visitation petition statute says serve the parents or the husband and the wife in the manner of a summons as in a dissolution action. In this particular case, although Ms. Hill filed the complaint for grandparent visitation several months before the dismissal, there was no summons requested, let alone it wasn't even requested. I made that argument in my brief, was that on the date, as of the time Mr. Tilson filed that motion to dismiss at 9 p.m. from the filing system, there had been no summons served. And I think that...
And then what happened the next day?
What happened the next day? I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what happened. What I can say is that I just don't know. My best guess is that Mr. Crowell, the young attorney, didn't want to irritate a judge by just not showing up. That's a guess. I don't know. I don't know why he showed up. I don't know what happened. I know that the decree dissolution that was entered in December says this matter came for hearing on this day. He showed up, requested leave to withdraw his motion to dismiss.
Your notice of appeal indicates that you're appealing from the order of April the 4th. What's the substance of that order for which you seek an appeal?
Well, we filed a complaint to vacate the decree on the basis that it was void. In the alternative, the court was to not declare as void, vacate the decree. Mr. Tilson wanted to regain custody of his children, so other relief was requested. Once the complaint was filed, the process was served as needed, a motion for declaratory was filed. Actually, like a summary judgment.
So, to sum it up, what do you think the trial court did wrong that brings you here today?
We think the trial court erred in refusing, to deny Mr. Tilson's motion for declaratory relief. I understand that normally a motion for the denial of a motion for summary judgment would not be appealable until the case was over. However, I think that in the instance of a situation where you are seeking a declaration that an order or judgment or decree is void, I think the law allows an appeal. So I do think this court does have appellate jurisdiction over this matter. It would simply be, it's a pure issue of law. There's no facts really involved. We're contending that it happened instantly. So my time is up right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kiger, good morning to you.
Can I please support a counsel? My name is David Kiger, and I am counsel for the appellate and here in this matter. We submit, for the court's review, my brief, we submit that they're filing a motion on the evening at 9 o'clock at night on November 16th. Did not, in fact, dismiss the action, but even if it did, even if you agree with the arguments made by Mr. Kaplan, the case was reinstated, if you will, the next morning by Mr. Preble, who had asked the court to withdraw his motion to dismiss, and he had filed the previous night.
Is that in the transcript?
That is in the transcript. The divorce decree itself of December 8, 2015, I think it's the first numbered paragraph in the decree, ironically drafted by Mr. Preble, that states that he had withdraw his motion to dismiss.
Is it also reflected in the judge's notes in the record?
No, it's in the judge's notes. I know it's in the decree. It's in the judge's notes. Our argument is, it's like three different arguments that I put forth to the court. First, I don't think the mere filing of a motion to dismiss does just by operation of law dismiss the case. Assuming that there was no third-party complaint, assuming all facts favorable to Mr. Kaplan's client, I think you can file a notice of dismissal. I think it's a huge difference. When you file a motion requesting action of the court, I think even in that Schroeder case, as I understood, there was a motion that was filed. There was an order of the court in that particular case. So I submit to you that all facts favorable to the appellant, if in fact all facts favorable to him, filing a notice of dismissal, I think would have dismissed the action. But this motion filed at 9 o'clock at night really wasn't even time for that motion to be addressed by Judge Ott. In fact, we showed up that next morning, and I was there. Showed up the next morning, I was there with my client, the intervener in the action. Mr. Preble, Mr. Cowell's predecessor, was present with the appellant, Mr. Tilson, and Ms. Tilson was present pro se. Everyone was in court. We reached a settlement agreement prior to the hearing. I bet you before 10 o'clock in the morning, we had everything on the record, this agreement. The first thing that Mr. Preble asked was to withdraw that motion. We called our clients and put this oral settlement agreement on the record.
Look, we don't have any of that before us because we don't have a bill of exceptions.
True. And I would submit you don't need a bill of exceptions before you, because what you have, that's easier to digest in the decree. The decree says that. The decree identifies in the opening paragraphs who was present, identifies that motion to dismiss was withdrawn, has a settlement agreement laid out in it, has my approval, which shows that it was prepared by Mr. Preble. It's even easier to get to this court to digest the whole thing. You have to review the record. It's right there in the pleading in the file. And it just strikes me, maybe 14 months later, the appellant's going to come before Judge Ott and ask them if they want to lawyer have you vacate this decree that I drafted, that I submitted, that my client agreed to. And we put on the record 14 months later, you shouldn't have done what you did because of what I did the night before. I mean, that just strikes me as bad faith. It's going to be doing that. And again, here we are in appeal.
25-601, the dismissal without prejudice statute, if one files a notice of dismissal, speaks of the clerk spreading the dismissal on the journal of the court. Was that ever done?
No, not that I'm aware of. What was done was, very little. All that happened was that motion the next morning to withdraw, someone bring it on the record, and then a few weeks later the divorce decree being. Again, I think there's a huge distinction between filing a motion, asking the judge to do something, asking for relief from the court, just like in the Schroeder case of the appellate sides, versus actually just filing the dismissal. And you know that a couple of the statutes, 25601 and 602, cited in the appellate's brief, talk about, you know, if there's, you know, a counterclaim and the impact of that. Here, and I was the one who filed the complaint for grandparent visitation, which really, in essence, if you read it, is a bit broader than that. I mean, it was actually a custody claim. The reason I filed it in this case was because prior to my involvement in the case, I think Judge Ott had involved my client grandmother due to concerns of both the plaintiff and the defendant, or concerns of both of these parents, brings my client in and awarded her, prior to being a party to the case, temporary custody. So that's why I formally intervened on behalf of my client, made her a party to the case, filed this third-party complaint in the action, matched again why, and then I get sort of situations, it's confusing to have two cases that get consolidated, one case filed in the other. Here it made sense under the circumstances of my client already being involved and being subject to this temporary custody order. So I think
the notice of appeal says that this is an appeal from the order of April the 4th. What do you recall is contained in the order of April 4th?
Oh, I think just my understanding would be just this global recollection that order denied Mr. Catlett's request. I think he had requested that the order that the decree should have been dismissed, and his argument was that Judge Ott had erred in that order by denying his motion to vacate.
No, that was the order of March 31. On March 31, there's an order that part of the motion requesting declaratory relief vacating the decree is overruled. That happened on March 31. Thereafter, on April 4, there's another order denying a series of things denominated temporary stuff, like custody and so forth. The notice of appeal is addressed to the April 4 order. Is that a final order?
Well, now you have me questioning that. When the appeal first got filed, that was the first thing I looked at, as you can imagine. Typically, you don't see appeals of interim orders like that. I'd have to review that particular order, that series of orders, to answer your question.
I just don't recall the language of those. Apparently, there's a couple orders, companion orders, that were entered.
Was there a trial on the complaint to modify after the appeal was taken?
No, it's not. Yeah, the entire case is sort of the outcome of this. There are temporary orders. We have additional temporary orders that are in effect now. We have the decree, which was the final order that was governed by it. Mr. Catlett had filed an addition to this request that decree be void or vacated. He asked for, an alternative. If the court doesn't grant that relief, then we want to modify that modification. We may have filed a cross modification on that. That does so depend before Judge Otto. Say is, if you're involved in a motion, ask
asking the court to do something that's not in and of itself by operation of law. This is a case where I don't think it does. I don't think the statutes provide for it. And quite honestly, it's not practical. And one imagine if you're practicing as I do on a day-to-day trenches and family law cases. So you go through justice, well, that's the status of this case.
Motion to vacate.
Right, it came
right.
14 months later.
Right.
And one, I suppose, can get into the sort of procedural banter of, well, should it have been a motion to withdraw the motion to dismiss? I decided the Molchak case, which was a case where you're dealing with, was a motion to reinstate. And I think the net effect is, whether it's a motion to in order subsequently to reinstate, or it's a motion to withdraw a motion to dismiss, I think in the end you land with, what's the net effect of it? I mean, I think if in fact one agrees with Mr. Caput's argument, it's dismissed by operation of law, it serves to reinstate it by vacating that dismissal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. There is no time for rebuttal, so we will go on to the next case of the